Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, executive editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, first of all, big congratulations on your well-deserved promotion.
Thank you, Steph.
It's very exciting. And speaking of exciting, we have some big casting news to share from The Young and the Restless. The show is gearing up for its 50th anniversary on March 26th, and they have big plans to populate Genoa City with some familiar faces. So Michael Damian, who we just saw over the holidays as Danny, will be back for the big celebration. We'll also see Danny's sister Gina, played by Patty Weaver, who was last on the show 10 years ago. Trisha Cass's Nina will be on hand, as will Victoria Red as the former Abbott housekeeper, Mamie. And soap vet Barbara Crampton will reprise the role of Leanna Love, which she hasn't done since 2007. Now, we're also going to see Michelle Morgan, who is on recurring status with the show, back as Amanda. And I am so excited about each and every one of these actors coming back. You can see that the show really thought about who could round out storylines for some of our favorites, and I think it's going to be great.
Now, I actually spoke with Michelle recently. This was like before she came back, but after she knew she would be coming back for this special occasion. And she was so looking forward to reuniting with her Genoa City pals. And I'm particularly excited to be seeing Patty Weaver and Veronica Red and Barbara Crampton, who have been absent from the canvas for a longer span of time. And for me, really bring back memories of when I first started watching the show. I just love that we have all of these returns to look forward to, and I certainly will be doing that. On the flip side, however, of the casting spectrum, we have had to say goodbye to Daze's Lindsay Arnold, who has wrapped her run as Allie Horton. There's an interview with her in the new issue of Soap Opera Digest, where she discusses her decision not to renew her contract. And I totally understand her reasoning, but at the same time, she just, to me, fits so seamlessly into Salem. And it was great to get to know Lucas and Sammy's daughter as a young woman. And I enjoyed her romance with Chanel, and I will definitely miss her presence.
Oh, I will too. You know, I like the casting they've done for Generation Next in Salem. You know, fortunately, there are other offspring of our favorite couples they can focus on. You know, Daze has a really terrific stable of young talent, but she will certainly be missed. In keeping with some Daze news, Ariane Zucker is marking 25 years since she first debuted as Nicole, which is completely wild to me. So as timing would have it, the Soap Opera Digest Awards that year were also in February, and we had a party the night before the show, and I saw Ari there, and I remember thinking, oh, there she is, the actress who's playing Nicole. But we really hadn't seen much of her on screen yet. And I mean, I could tell you it's like yesterday in my mind's eye. And to think how fully integrated she is on the canvas, you know, despite not having a family member to speak of on it anymore, or frankly, for any long period of time in the past, you know, is really a testament to the actress and what she's done with the role. So congratulations to Ari on such an unbelievably special milestone.
Hear, hear. And we are celebrating a milestone moment of a different sort. For another daytime actress in the new issue, I got to speak to General Hospital's Tatiana Ali Trina, who recently turned 21, about her star-studded birthday party that her mom had to kind of talk her into having, but she is so glad that she did. Family and friends were there to help her mark the occasion, and among them were her GH co-stars Brooke Kerr, Raelle Andrews, Donald Turner, Taj Below, Avery Pohl, and Eden McCoy. She also told me about the amazing way her fans, and the Sabrina fans in particular, spoiled her on her birthday with a whole bunch of goodies. And it meant so much to her because she said that the gifts were like so thoughtful and so perfect for her. And it just really touched her that her fans got her, you know, like understood her and what she's into and picked out presents that were so specific to her. You know, it wasn't that long ago that she didn't have fans because she wasn't on GH, and it isn't lost on her how special it is to have so many people in her corner, both in the cast and in the audience.
Oh, that's so great. And the photos were so sweet. And Breakfast at Tiffany's, which was her theme, is one of my favorite movies. So yay to her for channeling Audrey Hepburn. Now, I had the great pleasure of speaking to our guest today for a feature in the magazine, but I loved her story so much that I asked her to tell it here. It's Bryn Thayer, who fans know as Jenny from One Life to Live, but has done myriad roles since then. So she has a wonderful new project to talk about. So let's get her on the line and hear all about it. Hi, Bryn.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm great.
Great.
Glad to be here.
Oh, we're so happy you could join us today. And I have already spoken to you, but I am so happy to share your stories now with everybody else because you have wonderful ones to tell. So we're going to start that you were born in Texas and your father was a pilot turned executive at TWA, who during your time at One Life to Live actually served in the Reagan administration as the Deputy Secretary of Defense. So were the creative and or performing arts something that were emphasized at home when you were growing up?
No. We did go to events. My mom took me to plays, but I never saw that was something for me. I was more, I was a horseback rider, barrel racer. I was a Texas kind of tomboy. So the arts was way out there in a dream that I hadn't had yet. So, horses were my thing.
I think it's fair to say the first barrel racer we've had on the podcast.
I'm so glad.
Definitely.
Well, as the story goes, you were actually a school teacher in Texas before you moved to New York to pursue acting. So at some point that dream was born, right? So did you have an interest in performing that you set aside to pursue a more practical career, or were you already teaching when that dream came to be?
Still no dream while I was teaching. But maybe I thought, and I still think this about teachers, I think they are the ultimate performers. I mean, they have a captive audience. They really, if they're a good teacher, they have to engage, they have to entertain, they do all of these things that for, 30 kids at a time. It was definitely the hardest job I have ever had. My goddaughter now is a teacher. And, teaching these days, a lot different than teaching when I was teaching. But wow, what a tough, sacrificing type job for all those teachers out there. I loved it because I loved being around, the kids and all the chaos. I was probably not that strict. I played a lot of games with them in order for them to learn, like all the explorers or all the presidents, and we would make up crazy songs that they could refer back to in order to understand who discovered what, and I'd have them kind of create the song on other subjects also. I didn't realize what I was doing. I just knew that I needed to help them memorize things for the test. So that was my way of doing it. And maybe there I became, more of a performer, but I think the good teachers do that every day. So back in the old days, my old days, they just threw you in there and without a lot of, you just kind of did whatever you wanted. Now they have lesson plans and teacher meetings and parent meetings and all of these things that I did not have. So I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants.
Well, how old were the kids you were teaching?
They were fifth graders.
Oh, okay.
I started out at kindergarten, worked my way to fourth, and then I got up to fifth.
Very nice.
You peaked at fifth.
I peaked at fifth grade. Yes.
Well, we obviously know how the story turned out. You did make it as an actress, but it does seem like a big leap of faith to take, leaving Texas for the big city with all the unknowns that entails. So how did you end up taking that leap?
I was living with my best friend from, we met in fifth grade. And so we were best friends. Both of us went to different colleges, moved in together when we moved back to Dallas. And she was a model and she went up to New York one summer and came back to Dallas and said, we need to move there to New York. And I said, well, what the heck am I going to do there? I'm not going to teach. But took the chance. We moved there and I didn't know what I was going to do. She was with a modeling agency. So, you know, I went around to a couple of agencies. One took me as with the purpose of me doing kind of middle America type housewife products in commercials. And so that's what I started out doing. Again, I did not know what I was doing, but learned on the job and did a slew of TV commercials. And I was, you know, I was thrilled. I was like, you know, the Yoohoo Mom, Maxwell House Coffee, deodorant tampons, you know, all those kind of commercials that... you know, I was a middle America housewife trying to sell, you know, a broom. So that was fun. I loved it. And at one point I saw an ad in a bill that I received and it said, learn how to be a soap actress or soap. Probably said soap actor. And all I was doing in the days that I wasn't working or going on auditions, I was watching soap operas. Was One Life to Live, you know, it was the big three on ABC. One Life to Live, All My Children, General Hospital. I guess All My Children was first in the lineup. And so I thought, oh, okay, let me go to this class. So I went to the class. The man that was teaching the class was one of the directors on One Life to Live. And he at one point said the class was the 6 weeks was over. And he said, I think you should take another 6 weeks because I think you might have something. So I thought, well, is he telling me that because he wants, you know, 6 more weeks of tuition or should I do it? So anyway, wonderful man. Peter Miner is his name. And so I went back for another 6 weeks. And very soon after I finished that 6 weeks, an audition came up on All My Children. Wish I could remember the character. But of course, I met the casting director then, and she remembered me. I didn't get the job on All My Children. She remembered me, passed me on to Mary Jo Slater at One Life to Live. And when Kathy Glass, who was playing Jenny, was leaving the show, as you all probably know, you know, they, meaning the soap opera, like to replace people with people that looked similar to the person that was leaving. So maybe the audience wouldn't realize that their favorite character was leaving. So I thought, of course, I knew the character. I knew everybody involved in the storyline. I knew all the characters. And so I knew, of course, that they wanted somebody to look similar to the actress, Kathy Glass. And she had this very distinct bowl haircut. It was Dorothy Hamill was a big, fabulous Olympics ice skater. And her hair would flip back and forth. And Kathy had that hair cut. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to get it on my acting ability, but I'm gonna get my hair cut like that. The haircut was a horrible haircut. Oh my gosh. It was a bowl haircut. And I have a rather large head. But I looked like Kathy Glass. I looked like Jenny. And I got the job. And I definitely got it on my haircut. I auditioned with Michael Storm, and he's such a giving actor. And, in TV commercials, I was acting alone, basically by myself with a vacuum cleaner. I was not acting with people. And he was, I just thought he was listening. He was really talking to me. He was helping me. I walked out of there and I went, oh my God, what have I just experienced? I got the job. It was kind of sad. I knew these characters so well that when I went on my first day of work, I kept calling them their character names. Very embarrassing. But they understood. I said, look, I'm just a fan. I'm just a fan. But the rest is history. It was one of the best times of my life. I can't say enough about it. I have long lasting friends from there. And it just was an extraordinary experience.
Well, we have to dive deeper into it because we're Soap Opera Digest, Bryn. Yes. The one thing that occurred to me as you were speaking is that it probably gave you a bit of a leg up that you knew all the names, because we've heard before from actors that, you know, having 40 people's names roll off the tongue, especially if you come in as a recast with so many established relationships, isn't as easy as it sounds, you know, but you had that.
I knew everybody.
Yeah.
I knew everybody. I knew everybody's storyline. I knew who was married to who was having an affair, who was dying, who was getting married. I mean, I knew it all because I'd watched it for years. So, maybe I did have a leg up.
So do you remember when you first walked in those doors and started working alongside these people? Was there anyone that you were particularly starstruck by or intimidated by because of your fanship with them?
I hate to say it, but, you know, everybody. I don't hate to say it, but yeah, everybody. I was a goofy fan. You know, it was like going to, a fan convention. And, you know, I was in it. I knew the magnitude of getting the job, but I didn't, it was hard for me to take it all in because it was such a weird reality that I was now in, you know, to put yourself in a TV show around people that, you know, I had admired and I had watched. And I don't really... I think that, you know, I learned about acting by watching them before I even got on the show. The ones, of course, that we love the most as viewers, this goes for anything, whether it's a movie or a nighttime TV show or anything, are the ones that we relate to, we feel close to, we feel sorry for, we root for. And I thought at the time that the writing on One Life to Live, Gordon Russell was our head writer, he loved actors and he loved writing and he loved, you know, coming down to the makeup room and sitting with us at the coffee pot and finding out about our own lives. And or jokes or, you know, what happened with our parents or our brothers and sisters or, you know, and then several months later, a month later, you would find something that was similar to what you had just told Gordon in the show. So, you know, he made it for he created this just wonderful camaraderie between writer, actor, and the overall show. Mm-hmm. I guess Jackie Courtney was on the show at the time that I went on. And I remember, you know, we have we used to have dry blocking. I don't know whether they do that anymore, in the morning at like 7:30. And everybody walks around with their scripts and they show us the blocking kind of in a, you know, in a room with a bunch of chairs. And I walked in front of Jackie Courtney to do my cross that I was told to do. And everyone went, oh, don't do that. You're walking in front of Jackie Courtney. I went, oh God, I'm so sorry. But you know, that's how, you know, I would have walked behind her. Not that she was asking to be, but that's just the way it was, I was supposed to do it that way. I mean, she didn't have any qualms about it, but everybody else, you know, they were joking with me, but also, you know, protecting me, helping me, and giving reverence to her.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, in your early days as Jenny, she was unhappily married to the cheating Brad, played by Steve Fletcher. So what was Steve like to work with?
I love Steve Fletcher. We still are very much in touch. He lives in upstate New York. You know, I just have a soft spot for Steve, and he was one of my teachers. He came from an acting background. He had done a lot of work before he came to One Life to Live. He had to replace Jameson Parker. I think it was Jameson that came, he came in after Jameson, and he's just a special man. You know, he would, along with Judith Light, the two of them would stay late with me, would come early, would go over my lines with me over and over and over again, would give me acting lessons, acting tips, maybe try it this way, let's try it this way. You know, in those days, we loved rehearsing. So in all of our off time, when we weren't in dry or dress, we were trying to figure out how to make the scene the best it could possibly be. And Judith and Steve, that's just who they are. So they were, among other people, were my teachers. And, you know, you just can't. I got so many wonderful things from those two, along with Michael Storm and Tony George and Julia Montgomery. You know, she was so very young then. She played Samantha, but she had this joy and, you know, about her that was different from, you know, somebody my age. There were just so many great actors at the time on that show. And then, of course, when the Buchanans came in, you know, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the landmark storylines that you were part of on that show, and really, I think maybe the first truly epic baby switch sagas to ever, you know, take over a daytime show, was the saga of Jenny giving birth to a stillborn daughter, being unaware of the child's sad fate because she was traumatized at the time, Bryn, and Karen conspiring with Marco Dane, played by Gerald Anthony, to spare Jenny this great heartbreak by giving her a different baby who had actually been born to Katrina Carr. And it took years for the truth to come out, and culminated with Jenny making the painful decision to surrender the child. And the story was such perfect soap opera that it's really served as a blueprint, you know, for so many shows kind of copying that framework for, you know, various takes on it over the years, you know, up to the present. So what do you most remember about the years of playing that storyline?
You know, again, Gordon Russell, and how at the time the network would allow us to have a 4-year storyline that, you know, went, you know, that we just got to live in, and knowing that, you know, that baby wasn't Jenny's, and figuring out with Katrina Carr,
Nancy Snyder,
oh, fabulous actress. And Karen, Judith Light, and Brad, and Peter, you know, it was so much fun to play. I was, you know, I was much more comfortable at that time, but I still, I wasn't sure how to play those scenes when I gave up Mary. But I was helped along the way with, again, the actors and the director, and they guided me. And, there was so much collaboration. There was I didn't ever feel any competition with anyone. And I think we were at that place of wanting the show to just kill every day. We really appreciated the audience. And they were so loyal. And it was, it was fun to go in and create every day.
It was a golden era, truly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So during that time period, you were married to Gerald Anthony, who passed away in 2004 and is remembered so fondly by viewers for the unique creativity he brought to his work. So what comes to mind when you think of him?
Love him. Love, love, love him. Another one of my teachers. Jerry, geez. I think he and Judith changed how soap opera actors are supposed to act. They were off the charts, those two, I thought. Jerry was just a ball of creativity. And, when the two of them, Jerry and Judith, were together, you knew that it was going to be magic, and they were going to bring something to the words that, even the writers had not seen. So Jerry was definitely one of my big teachers. We originally got together, he and I were just so opposite, the pimp with the ex-nun, those characters.
That old chestnut.
Yeah. he was like nobody I'd ever dated, nobody that I'd ever seen myself dating, not my picture of who I was supposed to be dating, but he was magnetic. And ABC at the time, well, I guess they have it on now. I think it was $20,000 pyramid. One Life to Live put us together to be two contestants on $20,000 pyramid. And, I never said no to anything if somebody from ABC asked me to do something. I mean, yeah, that's my boss and I'm going to do it. But I thought, oh, no, I'm paired with Jerry. What is that going to mean? So, we didn't talk that much. We said hello and we were very cordial. But he was like, he was fire. And I kind of, moved away from it a little bit because he always seemed so intense and working on his lines, and I didn't want to interrupt any of that. So he came up to me and he said, I understand we're doing Pyramid together. I said, yeah, yeah. He said, okay, well, go out and get the game, the board game, and let's get together and play the game. And I went, okay. Thinking, what? We're going to practice for a game show? But that's how intense he was. And in a good way, he wanted everything to be as perfect as it could be. And he was going to put all of himself into whatever was asked of him. So I went out and got the board game, and he came over to my house and we started playing this board game. And, he would give me a clue. I wish I could think of a good one.
Things a loaf of bread would say.
What?
Things a loaf of bread would say. Or that's the winner circle.
Hold on. Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly. I would say something totally, totally different than what he was trying to give me a clue for. We were coming from such opposite directions. And, after I couldn't get the clue or he couldn't get the clue when I was giving the clues, we go, okay, what were you, he would say, all right, let's break this down. Let's analyze it. And I was thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get him out of my apartment? I'm exhausted. So We probably rehearsed $20,000 pyramid 10 times. And little by little by little, we could get it in one word. It was like we practiced and we understood each other's minds finally.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And, you know, of course, we won $20,000 in the winner's circle.
Nice.
It was just such an interesting way to figure out what you have in common and what you don't. Mm-hmm. And we figured it out. And, you know, after that, I was in love. So the years I had with Jerry, I am forever grateful. You know, we were opposite, and I appreciate his oppositeness of mine. And I know he appreciated my opposites.
If nothing else, you and Jerry gave the readers of Soap Opera Digest some very pretty covers.
Yes, you did.
Yes, we did. Yeah, that was fun. That was fun. It was a great love affair. I mean, it was so, you know, we got married at the top of the World Trade Center.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And, you know, it was incredible. It was just a great love affair. And it was weird too, after we made the decision to split, then of course we had to tell everyone on the show that we were splitting. And many of those people who loved both of us said to us, "It'll never work. Why are you doing this?" To both of us. We said, "Oh yes, it will work." So then we had to go back to all of our friends and say, you know, We're splitting, and okay, you were right, but let's not allow it to affect anything here, which I feel that it never did. I don't know how other people felt. You know, it was just another little wonderful part of a soap opera. We were living in a soap opera.
Right.
And we were creating drama, and I felt that it was in a good way. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe you're not supposed to date people that you work with anymore. And but yet I didn't know that rule a long time ago. So I might have done it differently, but I couldn't resist Jerry Anthony. So that's what happened. Anyway,
yeah.
Joe Stewart brought us up to his, you know, executive office and sat us down and said, We're gonna give you two a storyline together. This was after we were married, and we went, okay, great. You know, wow, this is cool. So they wrote us a storyline. I don't remember what it was or what it was about, but it was short lived. Joe Stewart, we get the call. Joe Stewart wants to see you. It had been on the air for a while. Our storyline. We went up to Joe's office, and Joe said, we're gonna split you two apart. And we were like, really? Why? What happened? He goes, no chemistry on camera. And we went, what? Our chemistry? No chemistry on camera? What are you talking about? We are on fire, the two of us. And he goes, yeah, it's not working on camera. So we got split up. And then not too long after that, we got separated. You know, just too weird.
Oh, goodness. Well, one non-romantic love affair that truly stood the test of time from your one life to the other is this friendship with Judith Light, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you became close friends at the time and remain close friends. What comes to mind when you think about, you know, that decades long association that you've had?
It's as great now as it was then. You know, Kathy Glass was Judith's roommate in the dressing room. So when she left, you know, I got to move into the same dressing room with Judith. And she's an only child. I'm an only child. I feel we look similar. She's just, you know, there's nobody like Judith Light. She's just awesome. And she's that way. You know, everybody thinks that they are Judith's best friend because that's the way she treats people. You know, I have learned so much from her about life and spirituality and thinking through things and understanding people and loving. It is an honor to be her friend. I love her husband, Robert Desiderio. My husband David and Robert, very, very close friends. So the four of us are a unit, and we adore getting together and just, you know, talking till 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, that's way past all of our bedtimes now. But, you know, we do that at least twice a month and have dinner, and Judith and Robert cook. We always go to their house because they love to cook. And it just keeps getting better. You know, to be around Judith and watch her work, you know, I came on around the time that Karen was on trial. So I was always sitting in the jury, and I got to be there for that jury when she was on the witness stand. It was electric in that stage. And she did it many times.
Wow.
And it was so, you know, I've watched it, on YouTube or somewhere, maybe within the last couple of years. And I'm still in awe of it. I mean, talk about, I mean, nobody had ever seen anything like that on a soap opera or maybe on a TV show that had that storyline. That was another long storyline. That went over the years. So it was, you know, that was a highlight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty neat.
Now, as Jenny's storyline continued, she had a short-lived marriage to Peter, played by Denny Albee, who was killed in a car accident, and then found love with David Rinaldi, played by the late, great Michael Zaslow. So tell us about working with Michael.
Oh, you know, another love of my life. We became fast friends. I became very close to his family, his two daughters. Just one of those actors that, you know, not many of those kind of people, I don't think. He was just something really, really special. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun with him. We did. We had so much fun together. He was always up and enjoyed life and was happy and was, you know, a fabulous father and husband. And we clicked. We really, really clicked. I was thrilled that I got to be his soap opera wife and that I got to have the storyline with him. And it was a love affair for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 1986, after such an incredible and rich run, you exited One Life to Live. What prompted your decision?
I felt like, well, if I could stay here, I could stay here, and I loved New York, and I could be perfectly happy being on the soap for as many years as they would have me. But I thought, you know, this was really the only character I'd ever done. So I thought, I wonder if I can do other characters. But the only way I'm going to figure that out is if I leave. So my plan was to leave and then stay in New York for a year and then just enjoy New York because I just loved it, and then moved to LA and see if, you know, I could make it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it certainly started you on a very rich television career. And in 1992, you became a series regular on Matlock, playing Matlock's daughter, Leanne. So what stands out to you about that role and working opposite the legendary Andy Griffith?
Oh, well, that was another show that I've watched quite a bit. Or that, you know, I don't know whether it was quite a bit, but I definitely watched the show and certainly watched Andy. You know, it was fun because I had been on a couple of other short-lived series and they had all, let's see, well, one had been in Hawaii with Richard Chamberlain. So I got to move there and live there. That was wonderful. And one had been with James Brolin, which we shot down in San Diego. That was a year short. You know, these were both two shows that only lasted a season. Well, I think the James Brolin show lasted another season after I left. They recast the whole cast, except for James. And then to get, I had done a guest spot on Matlock. And then as a murderer, something. And then they asked me to come back and play his daughter. But they were going to shoot it in Wilmington, North Carolina. So, you know, I was interested, you know, very interested in that. And, you know, living, I liked the fact of living, you know, somewhere else and doing it. So that was fun. And I stayed for 2 years and I was ready to, you know, move on to something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the mid 90s, you actually did pop back in to our world and did a little stint on General Hospital that saw you working opposite Anthony Geary as Luke. What do you remember about that couple of days of work there?
I was a wreck. I was, you know, it was so unfamiliar to me. Because I'd been gone so long and I didn't understand the pace of it or I was a fish out of water. I mean, and Anthony Geary, I got to do scenes with him. I was terrible. I was terrible. You know, and he, what it couldn't have been more of a, you know, wonderful actor to be opposite. But I was a wreck. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been only 3 days, thank God. I don't know. You know, it was hard for me. I think that was when the schedule, what was so different than what our schedule was, and we ran things all the time. Well, you know, that's just not the way they operated anymore. So I don't think I ever ran it with Anthony until, you know, the camera, came on. So I was, and not because of him or anything, that's just, you know, they were moving. And I was, I don't know how many years older than I had been on One Life to Live. So I, that's a learned process. That's a, you know, a thing in your brain that it's learned how to memorize like that, I think. And, you know, they just do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bren, the great news is the show is just about to celebrate its 60th birthday, so you did it no harm.
Oh, thank God.
But you did pop up on a host of other series in the movie Blue Jasmine. You were on one of my favorite shows, Suits. But these days, you're also pivoting into writing, and I want to talk about this amazing show that you've written called Let Me In, and I want you to tell the story of your inspiration for the piece because it's incredibly moving.
When I was living in New York and I'd just gotten on One Life to Live, hadn't been on it too long, and I was living with my 10-year-old, or, you know, I think we were 10 when we met, best friend, who I moved from Texas to New York with. She died in a car accident, which, of course, was devastating. Soap opera got me through, all those people on the soap opera. And having a job at the time, so as everybody that has gone through a death of a loved one goes through grief differently. We're all so different in how we accept or reject or cover grief. So I don't know how long I've had this play in my head, but you know, she is a huge, still my girlfriend, still a huge part of my life. I've got her pictures everywhere, talk to her all the time, have great memories. So I started taking writing classes, 10, 15 years ago, and learned about writing. And I've started doing some short films that I wrote based on experience that I had had called The Worst Day. And started writing poetry and different things. And then I thought, let me write this play I have in my head about my girlfriend's death and how it's a 3-character play. I think each character is a part of me and how I dealt with the death and continue to deal with it. She was driving in a car, in a convertible with her. He wasn't a fiance at the time, but he was going to be. I've pushed the facts a little bit, but a lot of it is based on truth. She didn't have her seatbelt on, flew out of the car. He lived. And it's about the fiance and the best friend coming together to deal with their rock leaving the planet. Both of them very close to the person that died. And then a police officer comes in to the play to, kind of help them through the day because they're trying to get to the funeral and they really don't want to go. So it's a comedy, a darkish comedy. We open next weekend. And I think we had a great dress rehearsal last night. And I must say, I think it's good. So it's been great for me because it's just been reliving all that time we were together and all that love that we had and celebrating her life. I hope other people, when they come to see it, they see part of themselves and how they deal with grief and that it can be, some good medicine. We all have to get through this world and lose people along the way, whether it's to COVID or cancer or automobile accidents or shotguns or, so it is, it's just part of life and we're all in it together. We all have to deal with it. So that's where I'm coming from in the writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's called Let Me In and it's running. It'll be running through April 2nd on Saturdays and Sundays at Theater 68 Arts Complex in North Hollywood. And one of the stars of it is one of my favorites from Lost, Jorge Garcia. Oh. So how did he get involved and what was it like for you to see him bringing your words to life?
Jorge and I have been in an acting class for many years. And, I've always, his work is incredible in class and anywhere, of course, where we've seen him on television. He's such a thoughtful actor. He really, you can see him using his brain to figure out, how to approach a line or a thought. He never says anything that is not from a place of truth. And he is so damn funny that, I've seen the play so many times and it's laugh out loud, Jorge. He just touches this place that he's brought something to this character that I never imagined. And the other two actors, Brian McKinley and Rachel Myers, they were also in a class that we were all in together. So we've all known each other. We're this unit and we have a shorthand with each other. And, this is my first time directing a play. So I was smart enough to know, well, I'm going to get the best actors because whatever they do is going to enhance my words. And I think, you root for all three of the characters. They come from a different perspective about death. and dealing with death. And Jorge Garcia, wow. He's also getting ready to do a new show called How to Be a Bookie with Chuck Lorre. And that, I'm sure that's going to be fabulous. So to have him, you know, when I asked him to do it, I dreamt that he would say yes, but I was, when he said yes, I had to pull over and I just had to hang up the phone with him and have a good cry because I was so honored that he decided to do this play, that I was just overjoyed. And, you know, the tears came. So thank you to all three of them. But there is a special, special person in Jorge Garcia. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, we want to make sure everyone listening has the opportunity to go. It is at the theater that is an RE, 68artscomplex.com, where you can look for tickets. They are a very nice price at $35 and running through April 2nd. But you are not just writing. You are also still acting. You filmed a role in the upcoming TV remake of Fatal Attraction. So, you know, could you ever see yourself doing another soap?
Wow. Yes, absolutely. I would really hope that I could get into the schedule of learning the words and doing it. You know, when I do a role, on, you know, say Fatal Attraction or Suits, they are, both of those shows very specific about saying, you know, what's written on the page. Some people are less. So you want to get everything right. Now, I don't know how that is on soaps anymore, but I did my share of ad-libbing on One Life to Live. I think we all kind of did. Maybe me more than others, but probably not more than Jerry. but I love the soap opera life. I love it. So I would really hope that I could do it justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bryn, our time with you is sadly coming to an end, but before we let you go, I know, I don't want to. Before we let you go, you know, when you think back on the Bryn Thayer of 1978, who had this opportunity to take over this role for Kathy Glass, you know, how would you say that landing that first big television role and that particular time, that particular cast, that particular character changed your life?
Oh, so fortunate. Lucky. I was in the right place at the right time. You know, the people make it and made it and continue to. I would have never gone down the path, you know, and then I would have missed out on so many things. So I encourage people to go down whatever path is you see in front of you and you maybe hesitate a bit, but that path takes you and just, you know, you go to many other places if you don't hesitate. So
good advice.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Well, we thank you for all your time and for sharing all your stories, which I loved hearing again. Don't get me wrong. Even better the second time. But again, everyone, let me in. Playing till April 2nd and go see it because the story just sounds so wonderful. And Bryn, we thank you for everything.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Bryn Thayer for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.